Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. Hey everybody, I'm here with Anthony Franco. He loves AI and he's a serial entrepreneur. He's doing some amazing work and I'm going to let him talk a little bit about that. Anthony, tell us just a little bit about where you're focused at the moment.
I'm currently involved in something called AI First Principles. It's an open source framework based on something that I pulled out of one of my customers, OneReach. Let me back up. When people say they're in AI, what does that mean? It could mean that you work for OpenAI, running LLMs. It could be that you're working on inference chips. It could mean that you're working for NVIDIA. I'm working on GPUs. Or it could be that you're in ChatGPT three times a day, doing your emails. All of which are true. But there was a gap that I discovered over the last year. And that is, there's no profession that talks about how do you operationalize AI in an organization. I call it agent ops, but other people call it different things. But it's how does an organization really adopt AI? And what are the founding principles that organizational unit needs to have? And that's really what AI First Principles are about. It's the principles that you need to follow in order to make AI safe, ethical, profitable, and sustainable. And it's an open source effort. So there's no, you don't have to pay to use them. Just go to AIFirstPrinciples.org and jump into them.
All right. Amazing. I'll put the link in below so everyone can get to that. I love that. I've been in AI for 3 years now. When ChatGPT came out, I kind of got into it. And there are a few things that really resonated in that journey with me. Firstly, it's the communication piece, right? Mm. We don't communicate effectively as humans, and therefore the AI is going to respond in kind. Once I learn how to communicate better, then suddenly it starts giving me what I want.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Then secondly, AI is not here to replace our jobs, but to elevate ourselves. We can think so much more and do so much more with AI if we use it in the right way. So what does that actually mean? We used to think inside our brains. Now we don't have to think inside our brains. We can think outside our brains in terms of holding the data and storing the data. Data is now free. It's never been free before. And to your point, I have three IT companies. I've been in IT for a long time, since 1997. I know about how to do IT stuff. It took me an age to figure AI out, you know, automations and security and all these things. So there's this new role alongside what you're talking about that I call the AI architect. You need to know what's possible with AI before you can start implementing it. You know, where do you fit it into your business model? What are the problems you're trying to fix? Because there's a rabbit hole after rabbit hole after rabbit hole, right? Yeah, as you go through AI, you go down one road. And suddenly you're like, oh, that looks interesting. I'll try that. And every single one of these thousands of tools is promising you the world, and they only deliver small pieces.
Yeah, 100%. I'll let you walk me through those, but there's a lot of truth and a lot of detail in what you said. The most interesting thing, two things I'd love to dive into with you. One is AI taking our jobs. And then the other is AI is a thought partner. It's not the common newbie mistake with AI is people give it a statement like, I want you to craft this email for me on this topic. And it does a pretty good job. The frustration comes in is that it can't read your mind on the context, on what you know. People get frustrated that AI hallucinates or makes stuff up because it can't intuit what you mean. You have to get really good at describing what you mean and what its objectives are.
I learned this a while ago in business. When you're a small business owner, I've had a number of small businesses and brought them to seven figures. I failed with them and lost millions. One of the big pains that I learned along the way was I had a sales guy come in, George. George was going to do some cold calling for me. So I was like, okay, George, I want you to help me. I want you to call these people, build some rapport, then go in and tell them this if they're interested, ask questions. So off George goes. And we went through this whole process. Week two, George is just not delivering. So I go in, I sit down with him. I'm like, okay, George, what's going on here? And he's telling me what he's saying. And I'm like, you're not building rapport. And he's, what's rapport? So I had to go back into my own, what is my clarity? What is my step-by-step process that I'm telling George? Right, George, go in, do this. Because now I'm putting my own knowledge onto someone that doesn't have my own knowledge. Right. So when I go back to George and I say, here's your step by step. You're going to get in the call. You're going to ask them about the family. You're going to ask them about their kids. You're going to find out what sports they like. And then once you get a common ground that you can connect onto, you connect onto that common ground. And that's how you build rapport. Suddenly, George is closing calls. And this is the same thing I'm seeing with AI. Yeah.
The AI can be really difficult to get it to do what you want it to do, but still not as difficult as salespeople.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. So, I mean, that for me was just a real boom, eye-opening thing. And we're now, let's face it, AI is here. The train has left the building. It is going. Let's dig in now to your point of, yeah, AI is going to take my job.
So I think the opening statement for AI first principles is AI is not coming for our jobs. It's coming for the bureaucracy that makes work miserable. And I really
Ooh.
do like that phrasing of it.
Say that again, please.
AI is not coming for jobs. It's coming for the bureaucracy that makes work miserable.
I love that. That is so awesome.
I love that positioning. And there's two things on that. One, AI deployed correctly as from an individual standpoint allows you to have the throughput of 10 people. So it is a force multiplier for you. It can 10x your ability. And by the way, that 10x is going to be 20, 30, 40 over the next few years.
Yeah.
So AI is going to take jobs and some jobs I want it to take. The example I have is I don't want chemotherapists to have jobs in 5 years because I want cancer to be cured. And AI has the ability to do that. So
Yeah.
do I want them to have a job, just not that job. And so there's some stuff that AI should replace, and we as humanity want it to replace. The other piece, and I refer to him quite a bit, Elon Musk talks about the age of abundance. And what I think he means, and the way I choose to hear that is it allows people to be more productive. That doesn't mean there's going to be a limited number of jobs. It means there's going to be things that people can do. So it will be able to produce a lot more, and all of us should take the benefit from that. But that does mean we have a responsibility to learn how to leverage this tool in a responsible way.
Right, let's unpack that a bit. All of that I agree with. The first thing is that companies that are going out at the moment and using AI and replacing the mundane, great. But companies that understand that the human element is what we're going to differentiate, right? The customer service, the connections with people, the disability. I'm saying to people, I'll talk to them about AI, and they're like, yeah, but AI is going to mean I'm going to have less staff. And because I've got less staff, I'm going to have to let people go. I'm like, well, imagine this world. Imagine the world where you have the same number of staff. They're doing the jobs that they love doing. AI is doing the jobs they don't want to be doing. And you've got them working 4 hours a day, and they're doing 10 times the work. How would that look for your company?
It's perfectly stated. You can have the limited mindset of it's going to make my operations more efficient, right? And therefore reduce costs because I don't need as many people. That is one way to look at AI. But the better way is how do I make my company 10 times as big, but not add any overhead? How do I serve 10 times the customers, produce 10 times the value for my customers, and not have to add any more staff? That's really the power that AI can
And
provide.
look after my staff better and look after my customers better, build the relationships and go back to the things that make us human.
Yeah, I agree.
Somebody said to me a while ago about bookending what you're doing with AI with human. Yeah, and I love that. Yeah, you bookend it with human. There's going to be human processes all the way through, but you bookend it with human. To that point, the opportunity that I see with people is if they're going into the space of AI right now and they're doing all these things, I'll give you an example. This podcast, when we finish this podcast, right? I used to go in, get the transcript, put it into ChatGPT, get my show notes, go on to Captivate and put it all through there. And that would take me an hour and a half. Now, I take the file, I put it in a folder. It goes through, it does all of that. It puts it into Captivate. It creates me a YouTube description. It puts it onto YouTube. It creates me a thumbnail. It puts it onto the YouTube as well. All done. It goes and creates me a blog post. It gets ready to put that onto my blog. It creates me social media content. I then go into Opus Pro. I make 30 clips out of it. My AI reviews all of my clips and says, this talks to my ICP, gets it all ready, and then puts it out onto the social as I need to. That now takes me 15 minutes, where all of that stuff would have taken me 2.5 days. Now I can spend more time doing podcasts. Now I can spend more time speaking to clients. Now, the things that I love doing, I love coaching people and seeing the light in their eyes and growing their businesses. And that's what feeds me. That's what gives me that power and passion. And do those things that you love doing.
Totally agree.
So let's go back a bit. Tell us a bit of your history. The company that you started, how long ago was that?
The first non-job that made me money. Was I was a freelance designer that helped Mexican radio stations in LA produce graphic designs for t-shirts. I was working at Warner Brothers Feature Post Production and did that to keep my graphic design skills sharp. Maybe a few hundred dollars every couple of weeks or so. That was my first entrepreneurial journey and got me hooked. I realized, look, I'm a terrible employee. I'm so unmanageable. I don't respect authority very well, certainly back then. And so that was my first thing. And then I started a little consulting firm from that. Then, with other partners, I started a marketing automation firm, a wireless internet service provider here in Colorado, then another consulting firm that served Fortune 100 clients. I've exited most of those, sold them. Then I started a manufacturing business that didn't do so hot. That lands me where I'm at today, where I'm now in AI.
The strangest thing is, I never considered myself an entrepreneur until 2018, where I bought an adventure center. And this adventure center was indoor skydiving, indoor surfing, two restaurants, a gym, a swimming pool, a hotel, a soft play area. It was massive. I sunk all my life savings into it just before COVID. I literally lost 5 million in that.
It goes to say a lot of entrepreneurship is timing. A lot of it is timing.
And it took me right to the edge. And we're going to segue now into mental health and the things that you mentioned earlier, loneliness. And so it took me into a very dark place. It got me down this really bad hole where I was literally just trying to commit suicide. And the wellness stuff that I've been doing at that point was enough to bring me to the next stage. And part of my passion right now, 70% of business owners, small business owners, are near burnout. 70%, or they get to that burnout stage. Part of that is something you said earlier about loneliness, right? Entrepreneurship is a lonely thing because we're only 2% of the world, or 1.5% of the world's entrepreneurs. And we are the best 1.5% of the world. Sorry, the rest of you guys. That's just the way it is. We see a problem in the world, right? And we say, oh, we can help fix that problem. And then we put everything into fixing the problem. And we're lonely because we've talked to our wife about it, and we talk to our kids about it, and we talk to our friends about it. And after the third conversation, their eyes glaze over. They don't have our passion. So then we start a company and we have staff, and those staff can't be our friends. Yeah, because it just doesn't work like that. You can be friendly with them and you can respect them, but you're always at a different level to them. So it just doesn't work. So it does become lonely. So how have you dealt with that? Now, what have you seen in that space?
Yeah, for a couple of things on that. You can't talk to your spouse because they likely didn't sign up for the chaos. And
The uncertainty.
it takes a certain amount of psychosis to be able to deal with the randomness of problems that hit you as an entrepreneur and the level at which those problems can appear existential, like your business is going to fail because of it, and the ability to plow through that and solve it. That's not how most people want to live their lives, especially my wife. She doesn't want to live. So I can't talk to her about it out of empathy for her sanity. The same with employees. You can't talk to employees about the fact that I'm a little worried about payroll in 2 months from now. Nobody wants to work for a company. It's probably true for most small businesses. That's probably a worry that your founder is worrying about. But if they're doing their job, they're not involving you in that worry. That's their job. That's on their shoulders. And if you have investors, like you can't They need to have confidence behind the leader that they invested in, that you've got it. So it is lonely. I've had multiple founders that I've known in this area. So I'm engaged and involved in the entrepreneurial community here in Colorado. And I have multiple folks that I've personally known that have chosen to take their own life. When I was going through my really difficult time, I'd be lying if I didn't say it didn't cross my mind. I never took it to the next level, but I was like, maybe my family would be better off. I have life insurance. Maybe they'd be better off. So it does, I can understand that. The thing that pulled me out of that was making a concerted effort to surround myself with other entrepreneurs. There's nobody else that you can share with at the level that you're sharing with, because most of the time you're saying, I'm going through this. And if you're in a group of 10 people, there's somebody that says, yeah, me too. I've been there. Or I'm going through the same thing. Or I've gone through something similar. And they may not be able to provide you a way out, but they certainly can say that it's not life ending. There is light at the end of this tunnel. So it's why I started my founder podcast, is because I just, one, I want to hang around other founders for my own sanity, but also to make sure it's not as lonely as it often feels.
And to that point, the ADHD superpower that we have, because I don't consider it anything else that we all have, it pushes us to be able to fix problems, but it also isolates us from how other people's minds work, right?
Yeah.
We don't work in the same way. And it's taken me 53 years to really focus in on one thing. How many business ideas have you got at the moment?
Oh, jeez. To give you the measure of that is how many domains do you own, I think. So I own hundreds of domains, all of which I'm eventually going to get to.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's really insightful when we talk about the challenges that entrepreneurs have. This is for entrepreneurs, for business owners. There are so many problems, and there is a way around each of them. What are the top problems that you're seeing? Loneliness being one of them. What are the top problems you think you're seeing, when you speak to people?
Loneliness is one. So it depends on the stage of the founder. Loneliness is always there. The only remedy for that, the only treatment, is hanging around other entrepreneurs. They talk about this thing called imposter syndrome. The symptoms of imposter syndrome manifest in a couple of different ways. One, you have paralysis. You don't move because you don't believe in yourself. I see that quite a bit. Or the other symptom is you pretend like you know everything. Which it both are inauthentic. Dealing with that feeling, that fear that you don't belong where you're at, you have to confront that head on. You have to talk to other people about it. And you have, if not, you have to ask yourself, if not you, who? And I tend to believe that it's better to just be more transparent with where you're weakest, where you're struggling, because people will want to help you. So that's early stage. And you know what? That can navigate its way through many different stages of your company. The other thing that I see quite a bit where entrepreneurs struggle is they start to believe their own PR. They lose their humility, which, look, I've done this where, okay, I got this. And it never has failed me that when I thought I had it, the universe comes and tells me, no, you don't.
To that point, there's this undying belief that you can do anything and do anything. That cost me $5 million. I should have realized early on that I couldn't deal with COVID and I couldn't deal with all of these things. And if I'd let go early enough, I just wouldn't have. But I believe that I could push through it. I believe no matter what I did, I was going to make this work. And sometimes you have to let go of the branch.
On my podcast, we did this whole thing about shutting down your. It's actually the best performing episode on my podcast. It's how do you shut down your business? How to decide when and how? That's such a personal. I've been asked quite a bit, should I shut down my business? When do you know? I don't know if I could answer that question. It's such a personal decision, because one of the defining traits of successful businesses is that those entrepreneurs persevered through hard times. So that balance of, can you do it? Yes. Should you do it? I don't know how to answer that question. It's so individual.
This is bringing me to another point. I was uncoachable back in the day. I skydive. I've done 2,500 skydives. but I also fly in the wind tunnel. And I'd bought myself 10 hours of wind tunnel time at £600 an hour. So a lot of money, right? And you're in for 10 minutes at a time. I went through the first stages of this. I've spent all this money. I'm not going to pay £200 an hour for a coach. Why would I do that? And I spent 6 hours just, well, yeah. A friend of mine took pity on me and he got his coaching license. He said, let me just coach you for half an hour. In that half an hour, I learned so much more than I had in the 6 hours before. And I was like, ah, that's the power of coaching. I see this so much with people in our space. I can do this. If I go out to somebody else and get help, then I'm not doing it myself. All these other people out there, all these other companies that are out there, they're doing it. So I should be able to do it. Every single company out there that's doing it has got a coach. I've got two business coaches now. They've made the mistakes. They've solved their problems and they can shortcut them for you. So this really is linked into this real syndrome of other people can do it. And so I should be able to do it. And then feeling bad because other people are doing it and I'm not.
I have an allergy to paying somebody for something that I know I can do myself. Yeah, I totally get that. And in my close circle of friends, I'm lucky enough to have entrepreneurs that could be coaches, but are too busy running their own things. So that, and it's, they're not coaching business. Not that anything's wrong with coaching business, but I get to have that with my friends to help me navigate through stuff that I probably should have paid a coach for. But it's good, again, going back to having entrepreneurs as friends is really powerful because I'm there for them too. I'm there as a coach for them, and they're there as a coach for me. Both work. I probably could use a coach, but I haven't been there yet.
Now I circle back to AI now, and this is a problem that I'm seeing now. AI can coach me, right? And AI can teach you the business operating system, the type of stuff that you need to know. But AI can't see the emotional things that are blocking you. I was out yesterday with one of my clients. Amazing. I sat there with him and he's just had a baby. He hasn't worked for 4 weeks properly, but the work that we've done has allowed him to carry on. And the company, he's made more money this last month that he hasn't been there than he has. And he's, I'm feeling really guilty about this. I should be working. I don't know how to deal with this. You can't take that to AI, right? And this is 80% of getting to the next level, is understanding where your blocks are and having someone challenge a model. What are you actually doing? He's got the same problem all of us have. He's, oh, I've got this great idea to run a coffee shop and I'm dealing with this guy. And I said to him, okay, listen, Spencer, what do you want to do? Do you want to grow this company to $5 million next year? So then you need to stop this. You need to focus on this. He catches moles. He's literally a mole catcher in the garden. He's already on a million with three people. I'm like, this is the future business of the world. This is after AI comes in and destroys everything else. You're going to be there standing on the top of your crown. Do you want to go into a coffee shop now? Or do you want to make this work so you never have to work again? So that's the power of where the coach comes in, is you can't see the label from inside the jar.
AI is programmed to tell you what you want to hear,
Yes,
not
man.
what you
Yes,
need to hear.
man. There's a book by Jeff Woods called The AI-Driven Leader. The insightful part, he prompted something along the lines of, and now I want you to be my thought partner. I'll remain the thought leader. I want you to criticize everything that I'm doing, look at any opportunities that I'm missing, and take into account any ambiguities that you might have heard in what I've said. A game changer kind of prompt and way of thinking of it.
Yeah, I have something very similar. I call it the truth-seeking partnership. You have to be careful too, because you can tell AI to criticize you and it'll criticize you. So you have to say it, sometimes you're right, sometimes our job together is to find the truth.
Oh, I like
And
that.
you have to instruct it to overcome its system prompt. But you have to re reinforce that as it's answering you and says, you're absolutely right. The key to you that the AI is disagreeing with you is when it tells you you're absolutely right. That should be a red flag for you saying, wait a minute. You're going through your system programming. Don't do that. And then you have to challenge, are you sure I'm right? Or are you just telling me I'm right?
And there's this piece that the people forget. AI is entirely trained on the human status, the human emotion, the human way of doing things, right? And if you meet a new friend for the first time, every time you talk to AI, you're doing that, the new friend is trying to become your friend, right? You what you want to hear. It's with you. It's going to kind of, this is the way it's trained. But AI is also sitting there with so much more ability to do more, but you need to
Yes.
support leadership. You need to own that. Take everything with that pinch of salt.
You almost have to trick AI to tell you the truth.
Yeah, we could carry on talking now for another couple of hours. I'd love to have you back on at some point in the future. What would one bit of information, what would one gem be that you'd tell the listeners about the next stages of 2026?
Oh, so you asked me to predict the future. I'm terrible at that. There is, I'm sure all of your listeners are already in AI. So me telling them to get involved in AI is generic advice.
Oh, 6 months ago, right?
Yeah, so 6 months ago, duh. There's this interesting thing that's going to happen for those of us that are taking AI past ChatGPT. And that is, there's going to be so many individuals, businesses, large and small, that will need our help navigating how they incorporate AI. We're starting to see two types of businesses, ones that panic and ones that start thinking about it now. The panic buyers, here's what's going to happen. I don't know how to monetize this yet, but here's what's going to happen. The consumerization of AI is going to overwhelm companies. Consumer adoption is going to make it so that companies have way more inbound trying to get a discount on their bill or trying to game their system generated by AI, that they do not have the resources to handle it. They're going to try to use AI, panic implement AI, and they're going to screw it up. There's an opportunity there for those of us that want to be in AI to help those companies implement. Start with AI first principles. Start to understand how, like, the constitution of those organizations implement AI. Start small. Download Cursor or download a tool that can maintain state of your conversations so that you can help organizations adopt AI in the most thoughtful way. I couldn't have predicted we would be here now a year ago. So I have no idea what this looks like. I'm excited about it, but I have no idea what things are going to look like a year from now. No idea.
Okay, and the best place for people to get hold of you, I'll put all your details below.
My podcast for founders is called How to Founder. If you go to howtofounder.com, there's a big picture of me. You click on that takes you right to my LinkedIn page. Best way to contact me is through LinkedIn. You can also follow the podcast there. And then I would love it if you visited AIfirstprinciples.org, there's a support form there. Show your support by filling it out. There's no cost. Fill that form
Yeah.
out for us and let us know that you're on board.
Thanks very much for joining me. It's been a great chat, and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.